Madam Chairman, or perhaps I should say Sister Chairman, and friends. In the course of the last few weeks, we have been on what may very well be described as a journey. Not the sort of journey on which we usually go, not a journey by rail, not a journey by car, or underground, or even a journey on foot. It's been, we may say, a journey, sometimes a rather strange, a rather mysterious journey through the undiscovered, perhaps the uncharted regions of our own mind. During the last few weeks, we've been travelling, perhaps I should say climbing, perhaps I should even say clambering through the very mountainous terrain of the Bodhisattva ideal. Climbing perhaps sometimes from plane to plane and from peak to peak. Now on a journey of any kind, it sometimes happens that we may look forward, may look ahead, and at other times we may look back, we may cast our eyes behind us. Sometimes we look forward, sometimes we look ahead to see how far we still have to go, if indeed we are able rightly to judge that at all. We look ahead, we may say, to encourage ourselves, to inspire ourselves by fastening our eyes just for a few moments on the last, the final, the ultimate snow peak, perhaps, which is our destination, our goal, as it discloses itself in the midst of the blue sky when the clouds momentarily part. And we look back sometimes just to see, just to try to estimate how far as yet we have come. We look back to see something of the nature, something of the appearance of the country through which we have been passing. Because when we look back, we can sometimes see the country through which we've just passed, especially if we look from a higher altitude, more clearly and more definitively than when we were actually passing, struggling through it. And as we look back over the road that we've traversed, as we look back perhaps from this higher altitude, we may see that here and there, behind us, certain landmarks tend to stand out. And this, we may say, is particularly true of mountainous country when we're journeying, when we're travelling through it. And certainly, the country through which we are still at present even passing is, we may say, nothing if not mountainous. To me, as I look back in thought, retrospectively, over the lectures of the previous weeks, there is something that stands out, one thing perhaps that stands out, something that dominates, as it were, the entire landscape through which we have been passing and through which we are still passing. And that is the bodhicitta, the will to universal enlightenment. In retrospect, looking back over the lectures of the past few weeks, all the other aspects of the Bodhisattva ideal seem to group themselves quite naturally around this one, around the bodhicitta, the will to enlightenment. They seem to group themselves around it just as lesser mountain peaks group themselves around one great, one particularly lofty peak that towers above all the rest. The Bodhisattva we saw at the beginning is the ideal Buddhist. He's one who lives for the sake of the enlightenment of all sentient beings. But then, how does the Bodhisattva become a Bodhisattva? He becomes a Bodhisattva, we saw, only by virtue of the arising of the Bodhicitta, which is not just a thought, not just an idea in somebody's mind. However refined an idea, however elevated a thought, the Bodhicitta is something much more than that. It's something, we saw, transcendental, something cosmic, something universal, something which sweeps through the whole of existence. And we saw also that it has two great aspects, this Bodhicitta. It has what is traditionally called a vow aspect and what is similarly called an establishment aspect. The first, the vow aspect, consists in the formulation by the Bodhisattva of certain vows, the import of all of which is universal. For instance, the four great vows, which we studied in some detail. And this vow aspect of the Bodhicitta represents the expression of the one universal Bodhicitta in terms of the life and the work of the individual Bodhisattva. And the other aspect of the Bodhicitta, the establishment aspect, consists, we saw, in the practice by the Bodhisattva of the six paramitas, the six perfections, the six transcendental virtues. And these, as we saw over a period of 3 weeks, are made up of three pairs. First of all, there's the pair of giving and uprightness. These represent the altruistic and the individualistic aspects of the spiritual life. Then there's the pair of patience and vigor. In other words, the masculine and the feminine approaches to the spiritual life. And then again, finally, there's the pair of meditation and wisdom. And these represent, we may say, the internal and external dimensions, as it were, of the enlightened mind, the Buddha mind. And all these pairs of opposites, altruism and individualism, the masculine, the feminine, meditation, wisdom, all these pairs of opposites, we saw, are synthesized and balanced by the Bodhisattva. In his life, in his spiritual life, there's no one-sidedness whatsoever. Everything is balanced, harmonized, and integral.